This is Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman. The Boston School Committee has officially announced the finalists for the superintendent position for the district. School Committee member Michael LeCanto spoke with reporters about the finalists and the search process earlier today.
We're very excited. We have three very highly qualified candidates that have been called from a beginning list of around 150.
We're going to take a closer look now at those three finalists with WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin. Max, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Jill.
So it has been a long search. It's been about 9-10 months. Maybe I'm a little off there between the time Tommy Chang resigned since the end of last school year. We're down to three finalists. Who made the cut? And so far, any objections to anyone?
Well, we've got three people. There's Brenda Caselius, who is the former head of the Minnesota Department of Education. You've got Marie Izquierdo, who is the chief academic officer for the Miami-Dade County Public Schools. And then Oscar Santos, who's the head of school at Cathedral High School, which is in the south end of Boston. All three are people of color. They're relatively close in age, mid-40s, early 50s, and all three started in the classroom and spent their careers in education.
That's a lot of equality in there in different ways. Let's start with Brenda Caselius. Tell us what you can about her history, her background.
She's interesting. She climbed all the way up the education career ladder, mostly in Minnesota. Her resume says she started as a paraprofessional in special education 30 years ago. She taught for several years, and then she started to rise through administrative ranks. And eventually, she oversaw all of Minnesota's public schools as their commissioner from 2011 until just this past January when a new governor came in. And in between, she worked for Carol Johnson, who may be familiar to some of our listeners, in Memphis. Johnson served as Boston's superintendent for nearly 6 years, which is actually kind of a long time to hold that job. And Caselius sees Johnson as a key mentor for her.
All right. But so she is not only applying for the Boston job. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. She's also a finalist for Michigan State Superintendent of Education. And she'll be interviewing for that on April 22nd, next Monday, and then interviewing for this job on the following day, the 23rd.
That's a very tight schedule. So we'll all know soon. So another candidate, Marie Izquierdo. What is her background?
Izquierdo is the daughter of a Cuban immigrant. She worked both for the state of Florida and more recently for Miami-Dade. She was seen as an advocate for sort of high-tech learning, Jill. She got $1 billion+ into classrooms, buying computers, renovating learning spaces. And she's the only one of the three candidates without a doctorate. But she was a fellow at what's called the Broad Academy until last year. That's a program that's seen as a way to train professional school leaders with, some people would say, a kind of business-minded approach to the job.
Is that here in Boston?
It's a national program.
Oscar Santos, the third candidate, is a name that some may be familiar with if they have kids in school. He worked in the Boston Public Schools since 1996. He's currently running Cathedral High School in the South End. What do we know about Oscar Santos?
Yeah, Santos is sort of the purest local boy in the group. He went to Boston College. He started teaching at English High in Boston in 1996. He was also a headmaster in Boston and the superintendent of Randolph Public Schools. And for the last 6 years, almost, he's run Cathedral High, which is a private Catholic high school that serves a lot of low-income students.
There is a little bit of a question about him, at least from some students from the high school now, from Cathedral High. They're speaking out. What are they saying about him?
Yeah, we reached out a bit today, and there were certainly some students at Cathedral who didn't see him as a perfect leader for the school. They said Santos was generally slow to hire more diverse faculty there, even though their student body is overwhelmingly Black and Latino. I spoke to Mel Viaud, who graduated from Cathedral 2 years ago, and she said, it took her by surprise.
And it baffled me how this man is of Latino descent and does not see the importance in diversifying. If he could not do that before, I do not think that he could execute that now.
Hiring a more diverse staff, Jill, is one of the goals that we have
or that the district has for
the next superintendent. On the other hand, Santos could reasonably sell himself as a really effective academic leader. He could tout rising test scores when he was running the increasingly diverse Randolph district, and he continued this trend of sending all of Cathedral High seniors on to college.
So it's good to remember and remind ourselves why we are here at this point of hiring another superintendent. Tommy Chang resigned unexpectedly last June. Maybe a mutual agreement or not. We don't know exactly. Friction with Mayor Walsh, we hear. There was pushback to how Laura Perrell was named interim superintendent. Can you talk about the context of this search process?
Yeah, I think there's a sense that the people want to feel a little bit more engaged in these processes. There's a sense that Chang had a strong, strong vision for what he wanted to do with the district, but he wasn't always the best at getting people on board, whether that's elected officials or educators or community members. And I think it's worth noting that the new job description, Jill, calls for a superintendent who'd be a bit more visible and actively engaged in schools. That's a quote. They want someone who'd develop working relationships and build a motivated professional culture in the district. So they may be looking for people skills
Somebody who gets out of their own office.
Yes.
Okay.
But then we'll also get a more thorough introduction than we're used to these three finalists. Each one is going to do a full day of interviews and panels with different groups, one by one. That'll be Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. And that could be a response to the feeling that Mayor Walsh kind of went ahead and appointed Laura Perrill, something that should have been the responsibility sort of normally of the school committee. And people have grumbled about that ever since.
So this is not necessarily a smooth ground that this is all going forward on. And the city itself is going through some pretty big issues that will be on the plate of the next superintendent. Like, the Boston School Committee passed this more than $1 billion budget last month. And that could lead to some significant cuts in funding for some schools in the city. So what are the biggest challenges laid out at the moment for the Boston Public Schools, as you see them as a reporter, but what you've been hearing?
I think this is a job that chews people up, Jill, whether it's Boston or somebody else. It's never easy running a district of this size. You got 56,000 plus kids, more than 120 separate schools, and they're all growing and shrinking and changing at different rates. So let's just bracket the money concerns alone. You have some people who say the district is a bit bloated. They want the district to find ways to cut the cost of administration, say, or the cost of transportation. But then you've got another side now where the next superintendent is going to be expected to be an advocate. More and more, Mayor Walsh is arguing that Boston schools simply aren't getting enough support from the state, and he's thrown his weight behind a bill that could steer millions of state dollars into the district each year.
And there is less federal money coming in overall every state, so there's a factor there as well.
Absolutely. That's a trend nationwide.
When we get down to the nitty-gritty of hiring a new superintendent in the city of Boston, who will have the final word? You have a school committee that will make a final selection in the process, but we saw that there was a great tension between Mayor Walsh and Tommy Chang, and that was a factor in Chang's departure. So what is the mayor's role in this process, and how much influence does he actually have, if we know?
Formally, Jill, it's not his decision to make. It's the school committee. That's what school committees are for, right? They hire and fire superintendents. But Boston is alone in this state as a standalone municipal school district with an appointed school committee. And who does the appointing? It's the mayor. And again, Walsh did let it slip some months ago that he was disappointed in Tommy Chang's struggle to implement big changes, like an overhaul of when schools start and end in the city, or there was an attempt to save money on busing that didn't produce the gains that they hoped for. So I think Walsh made it clear that he wants somebody who's maybe a bit more politically deft, better at selling the changes, not just dreaming them up.
So when we talked about Chang's departure over the summer on Radio Boston, we spoke with Paul Revel, former Massachusetts Secretary of Education, and also with Elizabeth Reilinger, who is the former chair of the Boston School Committee. And they both talked about how challenging it is, as you said, Max, to do this job, but specifically due to a politically active community, including parents and a network of partners and shareholders. And that is not unlike a lot of city districts, but this is a large city. Was that something the search committee considered? And do you think that would give Oscar Santos an inside track, who's already in the district, in a school building?
Yeah, I think that is a place where you might see Walsh's impact. He often sort of jokingly remarked on the fact that Tommy Chang and former Education Secretary Ron Dorsey were not locals. And as a diehard sports fan, I think Walsh would be all too aware of a sort of Boston effect that can come to some newcomers. You think of baseball players like Carl Crawford and David Price, former Celtics coach Rick Pitino. There's a lot of people who have come to Boston and said, the culture here is way too critical, way too negative for its own good. So school committee chair Michael LeCanto earlier today did say that the committee looked for people who knew this area.
We wanted people that had some knowledge of the city of Boston or some knowledge of what it would be like to lead a large urban district and a district that's as invested politically and community-wise, partner-wise, as Boston is. And so we placed a primacy on that.
Yeah, so looking for somebody who can kind of feel out the native ways. I think that said, Jill, Oscar Santos is the only sort of true local in this group. I didn't see any evidence that either of the women has spent substantial time working in this district, but I suppose you could take that into consideration if you're handicapping the race at home.
Yes, if you're using all these metaphors, yes, in schools and sports. But there is also some notion that it's hard to bring a great leader to a great city, you know, with all these challenges. That could be also Chicago and Philadelphia, but there's been a lot of turnover here. How much freedom do you think that next superintendent will have to set that agenda, given what's ahead already on the plate?
Well, I think that's a great question, Jill. Walsh had a telling line in Adrian Walker's Globe column last month saying Boston is, quote, a great place to learn how to be a superintendent. And I think that's telling. There's a sense that Walsh wants a superintendent who hasn't had this exact sort of job before. And indeed, none of these candidates has been a big city superintendent before. They've had other prominent roles. And I think that's because some of the superintendent's agenda has already been decided in advance. The district's in the middle of Build BPS, which is a billion-dollar plan to reshape the district. And that's already underway. Schools are going to close. Other ones will be renovated. And I know some activists are hoping that the superintendent will be able to push back on that trend, like Kevin Murray. He's with Quest, which is a parents group.
So given the tendency towards consolidation and privatization in the system, we really want to be able to discover that the next superintendent is going to be a champion for our public schools.
So I don't know how wide open next week's panels will be, but I certainly hope we'll get to hear the finalists engage with that idea of when it's appropriate to close a school.
Quickly, Max, we have just about 30 seconds. This all in the context of the city of Boston, which has seen a lot of growth in real estate development and transportation investments and a lot of challenges with affordable housing as well. You know, we've got an achievement gap in the district as well. These issues are all something the next superintendent could possibly try to address. Can any of this, though, the affordability of a city, be fixed through a school?
I think that is really difficult. The job description makes it clear that closing that achievement gap is absolutely job one. But, you know, I don't think there's anyone who thinks that a starkly segregated, on racial and economic lines city, that all those problems can be solved in a school building, Jill.
All right, Max Larkin, thank you so much. WBUR Edify reporter Max Larkin will be reporting on this story, I'm sure, as we find out who the next superintendent is. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jill.
This is WBUR's Radio Boston. I'm Jill Kaufman.